the 90s. It's a time of grittiness. What else starts with a G? I don't know. It's a lot of stuff happened. Grime, all of that stuff.
Gall. Like gall. You have the gall.
John Galt. We associate all of this with, and so much more, with 90s comics. And today we're going to be doing a deep dive on a story. Let's call it that way. A story from the 90s. Thanks to our premier patron, Mr. Jeffrey, who we'll be bringing in just a moment. But first, besides our patrons, who are really the top funders of the show, we also have a fantastic sponsor. He is fantastic. And his name is Mr. Fox. He's the fantastic Mr. Fox. Stephen Fox of Fox & Sons Coffee. I'm a Dem Blend Dark guy. That's my buddy. This guy, let me tell you, if you want some variety in your coffee beans, you better be checking out to foxandsons.com, F-O-X-N-S-O-N-S.com. Check it out this week, because there's going to be more new beans up there. Mexican honey prep. My God, I didn't even know they had honey in Mexico, but somehow they created the Mexican honey prep. All sorts of beans on there. Again, I like the dark roast, but go pick out a couple bags if it's your first time and use discount code SECONDPRINTPOD for 15% off your order. What's your favorite bean there, Remzo? I know you've been drinking the Fox.
I went ahead and did Electric Boogaloo yesterday. I have some that I went ahead and put in my grinder today, but I am
grinder. There's another G word.
Grinder. Yeah. both a verb and an app that some of you are aware of, apparently.
We first met Jeffrey, actually. We don't talk about that.
I'm dying this morning, 'cause I haven't had my cup of Electric Boogaloo yet. And that's a real
thing without coffee.
It's been a Monday.
You look like it too, to be honest. This is why you got to see the video, so you can see tired Remzo.
I need that. That's my favorite. I'm not much of a dark roast guy, but I really like that one. I just do a little splash of milk in there and bam, like I'm good for the entire day. And what I like about this is that, you know, my coffee has basically replaced my energy drink consumption. So if you're trying to get away from energy drinks, go back to some coffee.
Especially if you're trying to get off sugar, because all those energy drinks are either laden with sugar or they're sugar-free and laden with some other shit that's probably giving you cancer. And I've been myself probably had one too many sugar-free drinks in my day, mm-hmm. while pretty aware I'm poisoning myself. The great thing, you don't even really need like sugar or anything with Fox & Sons. You don't need it at all. I wouldn't even recommend it. But if you were the kind to put sugar in your coffee, this is not related to Fox & Sons. No. I'm just going on a rant now. Monk fruit, Remzo. Do you know about the monk fruit?
Yes, I do. I saw a video about benefits the other day.
That's what I use for all. We don't even keep sugar in my house for anything. Even if it's for baking something, it's monk fruit all the way. So I highly recommend it. We're not sponsored by monk fruit. I get no benefits from saying this other than I want to share my knowledge with the world.
And sharing knowledge is, oh shit, what was the G.I. Joe thing? It's like knowledge is half the battle.
Knowing is half the battle.
Knowing is half the battle.
I know you were too young. You were not even a glimmer when those were coming out originally. But
PSA is not.
Speaking of glimmers, we got a glimmer with us. Another G word, by the way. We got a glimmer of a gem. I'm just racking up these G's now. A glimmer of a gem with us. Too bad Jeffrey doesn't start with a G. This is actually Jeffrey with a J. But Jeffrey with a J. But we got another G. Jeffrey Greek, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
The king of our Patreon over at patreon.com/secondprintpod. Jeffrey, you're pretty much the man. You know, you are the top funder. I'll just put it out there. You're the number one funder of this program. And that means you can do whatever you want, including make us read 5 issues of this Iron Man story that you're going to help set up for us today. So why did you pick this story for us today? Set the whole thing up for us.
Well, you know, a little while back, Remzo did an episode about Deathlok, and you're doing your Thunderstrike reread, and so I thought, you know, in tribute to that, we could do this little story arc, which is sort of a grand tour of 90s Marvel comics. You know, you got Deathlok, you got Venom, you got New Warriors, you got Thunderstrike, you got Smart Hulk, you know, 90s.
Forgetting all the spider clones.
Well,
he just means in this particular story. Unfortunately, yeah. There were no spider clones that I'm aware of in this story, but there could have been.
They're between the panels.
Right.
Yeah, there's probably one in there somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to look at this. This really, if somebody were to ask, like, what is 90s Marvel all about? This would be a pretty good storyline to just toss to them, because it does, like you said, it does feature a large number of the stalwarts, many of which are sort of B-listers or also Rands that they were trying to turn into something more, well, such as in the case of Thunderstrike, basically shitty human Thor. But they were trying to push these alternative characters. I don't know, Remzo, what maybe you have some thoughts on why this was, because it's not like they didn't have a regular Thor at this time. It's not like they didn't have a regular Captain America when they bring in a U.S. agent. Is it more that they didn't want to corrupt the nature of the current characters while still wanting to provide like what they perceived as cooler versions, like Thunderstrike with his 90s, you know, earring and his leather vest? Is it just that they wanted to connect more with the cool kids of the 90s, I guess, without actually changing the existing characters?
It's that to a degree, but also let's look at what's selling really well at the time. It's the ensemble books. X-Men has multiple titles. Avengers has multiple titles. Fantastic Four. And then they go ahead and bring in New Warriors. So the ensemble books are doing really well. And then what's struggling? What's struggling are their Captain Americas, their Thors, their Iron Mans. Spider-Man has like 4 or 5 books within the next 5 years. So between like 85 and I think 93... they're really trying to give people a reason to want to get involved in these books. DC is having the same problem with Batman and Superman. A few years prior, The Dark Knight Returns did a lot for Batman, but Superman is going to die around this time. It's a change in the industry in which they have to remind people that these solo titles matter, and that's not going to be the same type of story that you're going to read from an issue back in the 60s or the 70s. You got to make it different. And sometimes that means changing things enough so that way the formula is there, but enough is different that you really can't say you know what's going to happen with these characters.
And don't forget Batman getting his back broken too. That right. came around about 6 months, I think, after the death of Superman.
Immediately. They had to go ahead and take down the big two from there to go ahead and build them back up. And who do we have? We have
the original Build Back Better.
Yeah, the original Build Back Better. Still shit. You know, John Paul Valley takes the place of Superman. Then we get the Reign of the Supermen. So it was this idea of you can have the moniker, but you don't have to be the same person. And because it's the 90s, you're dealing with grittier people, the Eradicator, Cyber Superman. You know, giant robot, John Paul Valley, you know, Batman, who tells Tim Drake to go shove it. Like, you're dealing with not so nice people. U.S. agent, not so nice Captain America.
Ben Reilly even was like the grittier, sort of angrier version of Spider-Man.
He's so moody because of his past. Across Spider-Verse.
Interestingly, while they didn't really give us a different Tony Stark, I mean, War Machine had been around for a long time. They didn't really give us a 90s variant of Tony Stark, but they did, as we'll see in this series, they did certainly break him down a bit, I guess you could say, as we'll kind of examine here. But Jeffrey, before we get into the series, did you want to set us up for what's to come in any way, shape, or form?
So just a nice little recap. You know, when I picked this, I went back and I read some of the back issues of
how far Iron back did Man. You go? I'd like to know.
I think I went around 365 or something like that.
265.
And 265. Yeah,
That's pretty far back. That's a solid couple years of run.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, and just a quick recap of what's been going on, you know, in that, you know, what, 2.5 years or so. So Tony Stark got shot. And as a result of getting shot, he was paralyzed. So they implanted this microchip in him that allowed him to walk. But actually, the microchip was a plant by an evil corporation. I don't remember the name of the corporation. It was not Stain. It was not Hammer. It was some other evil organization that allowed them to hack his body and take control of it. So this led into the Armor Wars 2, which was sort of a stupid name because there were no armors. But and so luckily, Tony Stark had created a suit of armor that he could control with his mind. So he was able to get inside of that suit in order to override the hacking of his body. And so he takes down Evil Corporation. But the machinations of that Evil Corporation were actually just part of a larger plan by an even larger Evil Corporation that to take him out. So basically his nervous system is completely shot. So instead of, you know, letting Rhodey, who is his you know, his second in command at this point, you know, instead of letting him know, hey, just so you know, I'm going to have them cryogenically freeze me until they can find a way to fix this virus that's taken over my nervous system. He fakes his death. And so
it's the kind of thing you should at least tell your number two. Like, I feel like if I was going to fake my own death and, you know, and replace myself with like a life model decoy or something like that, I should at least give Remzo a heads up.
But yeah,
I wouldn't. Maybe that's already happened.
So Rhodey is left in charge of Stark Enterprises. And
I subtly called Remzo my number two there with and no one even caught it. But go on.
OK,
well, disrespect.
But and it's at this point that War Machine is first introduced. Rhodey had been like a spare Iron Man before, but this is the actual
he was Iron Man during the first Secret
Welcome
War.
To Alternate Comics History with Mark and Remzo. When Rhodey was Spider Man,
the first Black Spider Man, he was Iron Man during Secret Wars. A lot of people
Yeah, I don't remember why Tony Stark was originally out of commission for a while.
War Machine is a 90s variation. For some reason, I thought War Machine had been around.
Yeah,
but it was just Rhodey had been around.
Yeah, this is the proper introduction of the actual War Machine armor, you know. And so Rhodey is now, you know, Iron Man / War Machine for 6 or 7 issues until they fix Tony Stark. And so suddenly Tony Stark's back, which for some reason really pisses off Rhodey. I can't imagine why, but they unkill Tony Stark. He's back. And then, you know, that basically leads into where we're at now with issue 300. And of course I left out a bunch of stuff with the Mandarin and so on and so forth, but you know, that's the basic lead up to where we're at now, where in the previous issue, somebody had hacked into the Stark industry computers and basically unleashed all this crap that all these other companies that he acquired, all these, you know, evil corporations that he'd acquired over the years had been, you know, storing up. And that's where we're starting from right there.
Indeed. Well, we'll pick things up from there with issue 301 of Iron Man. This one is written by Len Kaminsky at art by Kevin Hopgood, who I cannot say I'm familiar with, but he sounds like a generic 90s artist. So I'm going to give him that title. But we do start off meeting Remzo's favorite, Deathlok. Now, Remzo, you did an issue about this, an episode. It's early. I have had my coffee, so I don't have that excuse. Remzo, why don't we do this? What can you tell us about Deathlok?
Deathlok is a soldier, zombie, cyborg assassin. Basically, he was a soldier named Luther Manning. He was a spec ops guy, super badass. And then one day during a mission, he basically gets blown to bits. If this is sounding like RoboCop, you're welcome, because it's basically RoboCop. So the U.S. government is like, you know what? This guy was a genius. He was a badass. Let's go ahead and put him together with a whole bunch of cybernetic parts and then send him to kill people. And thus Deathlok the Demolisher was born.
All right. Well, we start our issue with the aforementioned Deathlok. I think this one's name is Michael Collins. So there were probably various.
He was Deathlok number two. So he comes in later.
So this is Deathlok number two, I guess, technically speaking. Yeah. And he is hacking into. He's actually like fighting these little robots. So I think by hacking, he's literally entering Stark Enterprises mainframe physically. And we find out that way by his conversation with his what he calls Peter. That's basically his like his Jarvis that lives in his head. It's just called Peter, apostrophe Peter. It's short for computer. I'm not sure if you guys followed along with that or not. But that's his little AI sidekick is the Peter. And we find out through this conversation with the Peter that he is looking for some technologies that were worked on by himself back in the day for cybertech. And these technologies were appropriated by a guy named Harlan Ryker, who perverted them into weapons programs that are now licensed by, you guessed it, Stark Enterprises, because as Stark Enterprises acquired Stain International in that previous storyline, and what they acquired was Stain International, as we find out in the series, they didn't just acquire the assets of the company, they also acquired all the problems and crimes and whatnot, and the improprieties, if you will, which is a term that is used quite often in these issues. The improprieties of Stain International, well, those are now considered the improprieties of Stark Enterprises. So that's basically the entire premise of this storyline is other characters in the Marvel universe catching wind of what comes out in this issue, which is that Stark Enterprises has been up to a bunch of shenanigans. Not really Stark, but Stain International, but now that's all under the Stark banner. And so now various 90s heroes catch wind of this and have some questions about it. And they confront Tony Stark and or Iron Man, because of course, in this timeline here, Tony Stark is not known as Iron Man. He is just humorously always referred to as Iron Man's bodyguard. And everyone acts like, you know, of course, they're never seen in the same place, yada, yada, yada kind of thing. But everyone kind of acts like they all know that Tony is not Iron Man and Tony is the Iron Man. I think it's one of those things where half the people do know kind of thing. I think all the heroes but generally know.
He had his identity leaked so many times. And that was one of the funniest things in the mid 2000s when he was being nominated for George Bush's Secretary of Defense. Because then he kind of outs himself, and then it was right around
in the comics or in real life. George Bush was like, "I'm not
in the
Mr.
comics."
Tony Stark.
It was like, in the comics.
Sir, it's a character.
Could you see Iron Man overseeing the war in Iraq?
Yeah, I don't think it would have lasted too long.
No, not really. Yeah, but no, he finally reveals his identity to the world, and that has been canon since 2007 Civil War issue one.
I don't think Tony Stark needs a secret identity.
Not really. That's why in the movies, they just kind of like stripped it, because in the Ultimate comics, he never cared about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we do see Iron Man he still can't walk, but he can fuck because he has been hanging out with this.
Can't put a good Tony down.
He's been hanging out with excellent 90s short-haired love interest, Veronica. I don't really know much about Veronica, who she is. I assume at some point we realized she was a spy or something.
She was his physical trainer, like when he first came back from being frozen.
Okay.
And he couldn't move at all. So, they introduced
her. She taught him to move the important parts, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's literally like, you know, within five panels, like they're already lusting after each other. You know, she doesn't stick around for very long.
Well, there is we go to turn to the news and we see that there is an expose on Stark Enterprises allegations of corruption. And this is when Tony is kind of thinking to himself, oh, well, this is why Justin Hammer, you know, kind of got the short end of the stick and was very easily let Stark acquire Stain International, because he knew that it came with all these problems that Tony Stark is now essentially dealing with. We go back to Deathlok. He is on the prowl. Earlier when we saw him, he realized he's not going to be able to hack into these files. He's basically going to have to go into Tony Stark's office. And once he is alerted to this, Tony gets some help from his also sexy 90s redheaded assistant, Bethany, who gets him into the armor in which basically she takes him out of this chair. And once he's in the armor, now he can basically walk as Iron Man, but he can't walk in any other circumstance, as Jeffrey described earlier. What do you think of the 90s version, Remzo, of this Iron Man armor?
This is the one I kind of grew up on. I think they called it the modular armor. This is what he appears in towards the end of West Coast Avengers and towards the first Force Works series, which was basically his own version of the Avengers after the West Coast team broke up. This is also the Iron Man armor that you're going to see in the Spider-Man cartoon in the 90s, as well as the early 90s Iron Man cartoon. So this is really my first Iron Man armor I was ever exposed to.
Does it give you the warm and fuzzies?
It does in a way. I thought it was always stupid.
He's got knee pads. He's got like a lot of extra sort of like almost like shoulder pads. He's got like a lot of extra padding in this one.
It's not my favorite.
Built in abs.
Yeah.
Built in armor abs.
It's not my favorite. But it was my first.
Oh, fair enough.
It's supposed to be designed so that he can like add shit to it as needed. You know,
that's why they called it the modular one, because it was a mod that you could go ahead and it was good for a toy line, Mark.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we continue with this battle now. And as things often go when heroes battle each other, they start off not by talking to each other and asking what's going on. They start off by fighting and assuming the absolute worst of each other. So they're kind of going at it. But as these things often play out, they have the conversation wall fighting. So while they're shooting like energy beams at each other and whatnot, they begin to have this conversation, and Deathlok finally explains, which he maybe could have done with the phone call before the break-in. Hey, I'm just trying to track down this technology for this Riker guy that I used to work for. I think it's been turned into weapons, and apparently your company owns it now. And Tony's like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'm trying to get to the bottom of all this corruption too. So why don't we work together and not fight? And that's basically what works out there. So they basically, all is good. He lets him see the files. He's like, all you had to do is ask. And, you know, he basically like takes these files back that could have been used to create weapons. They shake hands. We're all friends. Tony then goes and gives a speech about how great Stark Enterprises is while being spied on by some sort of thug that I'm sure while it doesn't go anywhere in this particular five issues, I'm sure it goes somewhere eventually. I'm sure maybe Jeffrey can enlighten us. I don't know how far he dove into this Iron Man run. But as we get to the end here, Tony is going back into his apartment. Does he live in an apartment? If I'm Tony Stark, I've got at least I don't have an apartment. Why is he living in an apartment? Am I seeing this wrong?
He's a low maintenance guy.
Well, his house got destroyed several issues ago.
Okay. So. All right. So there is a logical explanation for this in the moment. Man, poor Tony living in the dregs in a regular old Manhattan apartment building. But this regular old Manhattan apartment building has come with some webbing today for some reason. No, not because Spider-Man is paying a visit. It's far more frightening than that. It is motherfucking Venom. And Venom always looks cool on these big splash pages when he just appears and you see his full face and tongue sticking out. This is about the most average version of Venom I've seen here, though, I gotta say. Art not exactly blowing me away. It's very, look, better than I could draw, worse than a lot of other people could draw. That's how I would describe it.
That's very fair.
Remzo, what are you thinking about this first foray into this version of Iron Man here so far?
It brings back a lot of memories because this is a type of Iron Man story that you don't get in the comics these days. You certainly never got it in the movies. This is a very periodic Tony Stark. And what it reminds me of is the fact that, he has gone through several major character shifts from the 60s until the 90s. He is Howard Hughes. Everything goes his way. Even during the Stain era and all that stuff, he's essentially always Howard Hughes. Then when he gets to here, he's a lot more gritty. He's kind of a dick. This is post Demon in a Bottle Tony Stark. So, we're dealing with a very darker, angrier type of Tony. And then it's not until really Warren Ellis grabs him in Invincible Iron Man issue 1 in 2006 that now we're basically getting Robert Downey Jr. So I have to remind myself, like, this is a very, very different Iron Man than what a lot of people are probably exposed to now if they became aware of him primarily through the MCU.
Indeed, yeah. This is, like you said, that Invincible Iron Man, is that the Extremis storyline?
Yeah.
That is the one where he is fully Robert Downey Jr., I think, in terms of the same character that we see on screen now. And this 90s Tony Stark, I don't think they do this in the movies at all. The alcoholism isn't present, is it? Or he drinks a lot, but they don't make it.
It's there, and you see him drunk, Iron Man 2, right. But after that, it's more of a joke.
Yeah, it's not really a big, but 90s Tony Stark was a straight up alcoholic, brooding asshole. So I mean, it's very different than there's maybe elements of that with the Robert Downey Jr., but they're played up much more comedically than they are like in an actual, downward spiral like the 90s Tony Stark found himself in. And who can blame him with all the shit he's going through? He's got to battle this Deathlok. That's bad enough. And then again, he's Iron Man here. I mean, he's Tony Stark here. He's not Iron Man, or is he? Because Venom, this is really a reminder that Venom is not have the morals of a normal hero. Venom is, he says, I learned your company has sunk its teeth into the throats of countless, I got to bring back the Venom voice, of countless innocents. And he just rips his head off. He just rips his fucking head off. And you think, oh my God, that's it. Issue 302 is the last issue of Iron Man. It's been a good run. But you notice there's some sparks, there's some wires. He's got a life model decoy. Page out of the book of old Nick Fury. Remzo, what can you tell me about LMDs, life model decoys?
The LMDs were created by Stark Enterprises for S.H.I.E.L.D. You see them in the first issue of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., way yonder back when Tony Stark was cameoing, ironically, just as arms dealer Tony Stark. They're basically basically robots that you can control. They could be both autonomous, as we see during the it was the one that where the Watcher died, Original Sins. So yeah. they could be both autonomous, or they could be controlled from another end, like a video game.
All right. Well, luckily for Tony, he had just chosen to send a life mile decoy to his apartment in that moment while he sat in his wheelchair. I guess that should have been the indicator that Tony was just walking down the apartment. He was just not in his wheelchair. But Venom is a smart one, and he's got a scent, and he quickly realizes, oh, he's controlling this life model DK toy from the penthouse, and he jumps over, busts through the penthouse window, and now it is, in fact, Venom confronting wheelchair Tony Stark. Wheelchair Tony Stark, however, he's got some fucking tricks up his sleeve. He presses some button on his wheelchair, hops out of it, and the wheelchair jets towards Venom and knocks him out of the window, of course. So now we got Tony Stark crawling around as he knocked Venom out of the penthouse, but Venom, he held on and he is still there as Stark sort of crawls away, slams himself behind a door. Venom rips the door. I gotta say, I really, of all these issues, the most, this is where I really enjoy this entire scene. I always enjoy when a character is without his powers or without his armor or whatever it may be and has to temporarily just survive a situation. Like, you know that he's not Tony Stark in any condition without armor, a wheelchair or not, is not going to fight Venom and win. But Tony Stark is really fucking smart, and it gives us a chance to highlight the sort of intelligence, the wits, and what have you of characters like this when they're somewhat out of their element. So how did you feel about the scene of Tony just basically trying to survive against Venom here?
Me or Jeffrey?
Well, anybody, I guess. I mean, whoever wants to talk about it.
Well, my thought was, you know, if you think, like, okay, so you send a life model decoy into your apartment because you think there's a threat, why wouldn't you just already be in your armor?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point indeed.
Because comics.
Or have a second life model decoy. I'd have like three, you know, like have a life model decoy in the apartment, life model decoy in the wheelchair. You know, you're fucking Tony Stark. Like, why? You don't need to use just one. I'm pretty sure you got the cash for a few.
Or even like, okay, so your life model decoy's in there. Oh, it's Venom. He's about to rip my head off. Maybe at that point, go ahead and start heading towards that elevator, you know?
Indeed. Well, eventually, Tony does sort of block him through this elevator. And then as Venom is trying to get in, there's a big shaboom and we no longer see Tony. We see Iron Man. And, you know, in the world of Venom, as far as he know, because he's dumb, like a lot of the rest of the Marvel Universe, he just thinks this is Iron Man's bodyguard that just happened to appear at just the right time. He was summoned at the right time. So, you know, now we get a little more of a even match, I guess, between Iron Man proper and Venom. Now Venom still is able to sort of fuck with Iron Man a little bit with the webbing and whatnot. But eventually, as these things tend to play out, he finally does get Venom with the ultrasonics. It's the ultrasonics waves that always knock Venom out. But you know, Tony's basically telling him, well, Tony, our Iron Man, you want to confront evil Venom, you know, just take a good look in the mirror. And he says, that's bullshit. He says, he calls him a liar. He says, we protect the innocent. Stark says, prove it. He says, okay. I guess I will. Venom just pauses for a minute. He's like, oh, I hadn't thought of evidence or proving this thing at all. So, okay. All right. Well, we'll give Tony Stark time to demonstrate his guiltlessness. This is not how the justice system is supposed to work. You're not supposed to demonstrate your guiltlessness. You're supposed to be presumed innocent. It's a little flipped around in Venom's mind. He did not go to law school. He just kind of goes with his instinct on this. He says, but we will be watching. And if we're not satisfied, we'll be back. And next time, we'll taste blood instead of metal.
Thanks, Venom. Real cool.
Thanks, Venom. He's like, thanks for okay. Nice threat on the way out. Iron Man goes back to his pad, calls Bethany over, who's helping him walk out. And let's just say Veronica, not really loving seeing Bethany help out. Who can blame her, by the way? Let's see what you guys think. By the way, is this a play on Archie? We got a Betty and a Veronica essentially here. Bethany and Veronica. Remzo, Bethany or Veronica?
Bethany.
All right, Jeffrey, Bethany or Veronica?
The redhead.
High five.
It's to me, it's close, but I think we're going 3-for-3 here. I gotta go with the redhead in this.
It's not like, it's
there's
not
two
really
kinds of redheads.
Yeah.
There's ones you can't say no to, and then the ones you have to say no to. But Bethany is in the former category.
Hashtag so. Team Bethany.
Bethany wins this round. Then we see that Tony is on a Zoom call here with the head of the Taylor Foundation. The Taylor Foundation is extremely concerned about reports of these improprieties surrounding Stain International's construction of a protoplasm inversion dam in Nadua. Remzo, what can you tell me about protoplasm inversion dams? I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding.
They sound really expensive, Mark.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, they're talking and he's saying, you know, we think it would be in all best interest. And he's like, yeah, I've noted your concerns. And he hangs up on this Mr. Taylor and is like, oh, thank God I got rid of this guy. But then on the next panel, we realize this Taylor guy, he's not just an executive of the Taylor Foundation, whatever that may be. He's a member of the New Warriors. This is motherfucking Night Thrasher, Dwight Taylor in the Taylor Foundation. It's time for Night Thrasher and the New Warriors. Where should we go with this? Let's keep it simple. Remzo, what can you tell me about Dwight Taylor, a.k.a. Night Thrasher?
Black Batman.
Moving on. All right, we got that done. Moving on. So, and I guess this is like the New Warriors are his outsiders, I guess you could say.
They're
basically, yeah, Black Batman and some teenagers. That's the New Warriors for you. Another 90s team. But before Tony can go deal with whatever that's going to end up being, gets a knock on the door. Who is it? In his full Captain America garb, so he doesn't forget who he is. It's Captain America, who says, Tony, we got to talk. Remzo, give me your thoughts on this issue while I prep the next one.
Why haven't we seen Venom fight Iron Man more? Like, this is cool.
It's a cool combination, actually.
Yeah, like, it is actually a pretty cool combination. Like, I feel like with Iron Man, they always stick him predominantly with, like, armor-themed villains, and I get it. But sometimes pushing him out of his element is really cool. There was one in like 2008 where Matt Fraction was writing and he had him fight Dr. Octopus. And that was a really fun fight. You know, I enjoy it. This was cool. This was cool. I was very pleasantly surprised of how much I enjoyed this when I was reading it.
It's the unexpected matchups that always add a little bit of intrigue to these tales here. And, you know, this issue 303, you know, Len Kaminsky is no Christopher Nolan, but he does his damnedest because we're not necessarily doing things in time order. So we get the story is sort of interwoven between Tony Stark's conversation with Captain America, Steve Rogers, and his battle with the New Warriors, which is taking place at some point in the future, I guess. I don't think this issue needed time dilation and confusion, but he decided to do it anyway. So
I appreciate the effort.
I guess I do appreciate the effort in some sense. Yeah, basically they're just kind of shooting the shit about their issues and their life outlook. And Steve, you know, Steve basically just came over to, to lend an ear and tell him that he's been going through some shit too. And this is around the same time that Captain America was like slowly losing his powers in a certain storyline. And he was talking about needing a replacement. This is all part of the conversation that kind of proceeds throughout, is sort of interposed throughout the issue. But
this is around the era where Cap gets his own Iron Man armor.
Did that happen?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Well, this is, I believe, later in this issue, they will talk about what you mentioned earlier, and what Jeffrey mentioned earlier, I believe, is when they shut down the West Coast Avengers. So they talk about this in this issue that Tony voted to shut them down, but he hints at having something else in the works, which I believe would be the reference to the aforementioned Force Works. Is that where that happens? I don't know anything. I've never read Force Works.
Yeah.
So basically, Tony gets a bunch of friends and gives them armor?
No, he basically is just like, you guys don't have to move. We'll just change our brand.
We'll just do it here.
It's like Sierra Mist becoming Starry.
Yeah. I believe the original lineup was Iron Man, Scarlet Witch, Spider-Woman, Wonder Man, and US Agent.
But then they had that weird guy.
Yeah, the alien dude.
He kind of just shows up and then he disappears.
Yeah. Well, because Wonder Man gets killed in issue one. And
again,
so
that's the time that Wonder Man gets killed before he's brought back in the Avengers run with George Perez that we did review at one point on
Scarlet Witch, SBC, I think, original. Is also part of this.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's
basically the Avengers, but more hardcore.
Yeah. 90s. Well,
the Avengers, if they all were really into Nirvana and The Cure.
But Tony and Steve continue their chat as we basically see that Tony has kind of gotten his ass kicked by the New Warriors. So we're still not really sure what happened there. We don't even know it's New Warriors yet. But yeah, this is where they had that whole conversation about what will eventually become Force Work. So they're dropping hints at Force Work. Sounds like you guys should be doing a Force Work review podcast. You guys sound pretty passionate.
That would be fun.
Well, look, if I can do Thunderstrike, you guys can do Forceworks.
I like Forceworks. It was short-lived, hardcore, really stupid at times. It's good.
Now we cut back to, so now we're doing the Christopher Nolan thing. So now we've gone forward into Tony and Captain America. So first we start, I'm going to try to put the timeline together here for you. Tony is talking to Dwight Taylor of the Taylor Foundation, and then they decide we're going to go fight, go to this dam and fight Iron Man or whatever. Then Captain America shows up and has this first conversation with Tony. Then the next day, as we'll find out, Tony is in his Corvette showing off to Veronica, trying to have his midlife crisis when he gets to this dam and gets into the battle with the New Warriors. Then the next day, which is we've seen before this, he's having lunch with Steve Rogers in non-superhero garb, and he's telling him about yesterday, which is this current battle with New Warriors. You guys following along here?
Yeah, I dig it.
I don't know if time shenanigans was necessary for this rather straightforward story, but anyway, he tried to do his best Christopher Nolan here. We go back into this battle. So now we're time jumping again, because now we're in Tony's car before the battle, and now we're back to the battle where Tony is battling the New Warriors and Night Thrasher and whatnot. And basically they came because they're not happy about this dam. They think the dam is built. It was built by Stain International using strong arm tactics, including murder, to suppress the indigenous protest against it. What was that like dam, that energy pipeline a few years ago they shut down? And remember that, that whole
something
thing?
Dakota
pipeline. Yeah, Dakota. This is the original Dakota pipeline. So I'm trying to say this dam. They killed a bunch of protesters, I guess. Stain International did, but Tony's own Stain. So now he's got to pay for the crimes. Instead of legal proceedings, we have a superhero fight. So now they are battling, and again, interposed with this other conversation with Tony. And I guess Tony and Cap have been talking for 3 days, because first they're in Tony's office, then they're like having lunch, and then they're in Tony's office again, unless they're back in Tony's office from earlier. Are you following the timeline of just the conversations with Tony and Cap here? Jeffrey, are you in on this?
Yeah. Could I just point out something real quick? It's on in the app. It's page 9, just that first panel with the New Warriors and just Moody Firestar with that stupid visor and that stupid jacket. That's got to be like the most 90s thing ever, right?
And that's so sad, because underneath all that moodiness and the visors is, hey, a redhead. We gave Bethany the benefit of the doubt, but they're just ruining her here.
This is sad. This is Spidey and his amazing friends Firestar too. Yeah. You gotta make her fun.
Yeah, that was the 90s. I think around this time is like when her boyfriend like got sent to prison for killing his abusive stepfather. Yeah, it was like his abusive stepdad or something like that, and he like killed him with his telekinesis and went to prison.
I would have totally framed it on somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, in this conversation, Tony and Cap are kind of lamenting their attempts to replace themselves with U.S. Agent, which was a disaster, and with Jim Rhodes, that was kind of disaster, he said. So they're both kind of like lamenting, like, where do they go from here? Because they can't really just straight up replace themselves in the normal way. And Tony then makes a remark about the kids these days being so angry. And then we go back in the timeline again or maybe we're going forward. I've kind of lost track to Tony's battle with the New Warriors, which, continues for a number of panels here until we go back to the conversation with Steve and Tony. Eventually, though, they work things out, essentially, as all these things tend to go. They end up in space at one point. Things get a little wild. But they work things out. Well, by working things out, I mean, they destroy the dam. So it's like the point kind of becomes moot at that point. And then Tony kind of saves Night Thrasher in the process. And then they're like, well, that wasn't quite what I had in mind. And Tony's like, well, let's just skip the bullshit and clean this thing up now. So now that we've possibly killed, who knows how many people live downstream of this dam that they just flooded, but whatever, we're not worried about that. As they're finally sort of, the dust is kind of settling and they're getting ready, we see a very familiar to me looking hammer before we turn to the next panel. That hammer is going to be used. What's it going to be used for? It's going to be used to kick their butts as Thunderstrike lets them know.
Thunderstrike!
Thunderstrike! Din, I hear the music when I see Thunderstrike enter into a panel nowadays. Thunderstrike has arrived. Remzo, I have done a Thunderstrike podcast for our patrons for several weeks now with my, as far as I know, exclusive collection of Thunderstrike comics, because you cannot find these on the Marvel Unlimited app. As I mentioned, the Marvel Unlimited app only has Thunderstrike number one of this run. None of the other issues on there. I don't know why. I would toss this to you normally, and I would say, Remzo, what are you going to tell me? What can you tell me about Thunderstrike? But since I've been doing the Thunderstrike podcast, I'm going to ask myself, Mark, what can you tell me about Thunderstrike? Well, Thunderstrike, a.k.a. Eric Masterson, was just a simple man, a simple architect who befriended the Norse god Thor. Why? Who knows why? But at some point, Eric Masterson got a little too involved in one of Thor's battles and actually was pretty much killed or was injured and dying, at which point Thor imbued the power of Thor into Eric Masterson to save his life, which it did, and it also granted him the powers of Thor. However, at some point, Thor wanted to be Thor again, but wanted to let Eric Masterson still kind of be a Thor too. So he gave them this other hammer known as Thunderstrike. And then because Eric Masterson has no originality at all or creativity, he simply named himself after that hammer, which is now just like Donald Blake Thor when he was an architect. He can now tap the staff on the ground, which will turn it into Thunderstrike and turn him into Thunderstrike, which is basically Thor with an earring and a ponytail.
Yeah.
And that was Thunderstrike in 60 seconds or less, everybody.
Good job.
So, Thunderstrike, moving on. I really, as I've mentioned, I collected Thunderstrike pretty consistently from issue one onward. So I might actually be the world's foremost Thunderstrike expert. I'm not sure what I can do with that title, but I'm pretty sure I hold it.
All right. Yes.
We now move on to issue 304. Let's see. Somehow I got all wrapped up in my, are they still having this conversation? Oh my God. Oh, okay. Well, back to Christopher Nolan stuff. But yes, they are still having this. That's right. Cause this battle is basically just continuing from the last issue. So we start off where, you know, Thunderstrike is yelling at Tony, and just again, these are heroes, but their first thought is attack. And this is his fucking teammate. They're on the fucking Avengers together, which Tony pays for. What the fuck? Like, he just attacks him without even thinking twice. He just tells him, you fucked up. So he's pissed because he destroyed this dam. Why? Because the dam was designed by his good friend, Eric Masterson. So therefore, once he hears of this dam being destroyed, and then he immediately taps his staff, says, I'm going to go fuck up whoever destroyed this dam, even if it's my friend who I've known for years, or no, at this point, he's pretty new, not years, but some amount of time. He's attacking Iron Man, and then they say, bro, why are you attacking Iron Man? We're fucking Night Thrasher and the New Warriors. We're Black Batman and the Angry Kids, and we destroyed the dam, so your beef is with us. So again, these are supposed to be heroic characters. All they're trying to do is fight each other over a fucking broken dam. By the way, if you're the architect that designed some fucking dam, why do you give a shit years later if someone destroys this thing? Like,
it's like, man, you got paid for it.
Yeah, you got paid. You're not like the owner of it. It's such a weird thing for him to be mad about. Like, you got paid to make blueprints, bro.
Can I ask a question? It just occurred to me. So Eric Masterson is Thunderstrike's secret identity, but how is it secret? He doesn't wear a mask.
Well, he does not look like this.
He turns into Fabio.
He's a different guy.
Oh, okay. So he looks different when he's not.
Well, he still has a ponytail.
In real life, he doesn't have big muscles, and he doesn't have a beard, and he doesn't have an earring. So
he has a ponytail.
So when he hits the Thunderstrike, he gets a ponytail, he gets his earring, he gets his 90s garb, he gets his leather vest, and no one's recognizing him.
He looks like the saxophone. Look,
if I can believe Clark Kent, I can believe this, you know?
Okay. Fair enough. Because comics.
You're gonna have to because comics on this one, yes. But there is somewhat of an explanation, at least because like Clark Kent and Superman are the same. They're literally the same guy with glasses. Thunderstrike is at least going through a physical transformation when he taps the staff. So to me, I can buy that one. Like He-Man. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So yes, anyway, as these things tend to unfold, fisticuffs before words. So now Thunderstrike, he's so upset because his now this is even more ridiculous when you understand Thunderstrike's premise. He's not even saying I designed this dam, which is already absurd. He's saying my friend, some guy I know designed this dam. Therefore, I'm going to just immediately attack my friend Tony over this because I think he knows Tony's Iron Man. He might not. He's new to the scene, so maybe he doesn't know what's going on. So they're fighting each other. And then we hear enough, cut it out. All of you, Tony is just fucking had enough of this shit. He's had days of fighting fucking Venom, fighting these stupid kids, having an endless conversation with a boring Steve Rogers. He is just, that hasn't happened yet. That's in the future. Sorry. And in the past, he says, or is this your idea? He says, have you lost your minds? Or is this your idea of accomplishment? As he points to all the destruction and, you know, Dwight Taylor's like, well, no, but Tony's in full dad mode now. He's had it. He's like, no buts. This is what happens when you run around half-cocked, applying your simplistic solutions to complex problems. And you know what? Tony's right. These assholes just showed up and started fucking throwing fists. Like, they have no place here. This is what everyone, Tony's been handling all this pretty well. You know, all these supposed heroes, except Venom, he doesn't really claim to be a hero, just a lethal protector, so fair enough. And he ripped Tony's life model decoy head off. They're just showing up and throwing fists. In fact, Venom is the most consistent with who he says he is, at least. You know, he says, I go and kill people who do wrong things. That's just what I do. There's no justice process. These are supposed to be heroes. So I totally get why Tony is fed up with this shit.
This is definitely a real criticism of like the 90s changes in comics. I think I see this now more than I did the first reading.
Meanwhile, we go back to the other conversation that Steve and Tony, do you realize we're interposing this battle between not one, but two different conversations between Tony and Steve Rogers? One when they're in his office from before this fight, and then one when they're having lunch like days after this fight. But they're intersplicing both of these within this battle. Len Kaminsky is like trying to win a fucking Eisner Award here with this timeline shit. But I think I've got it down. The lunch is after the battle, and the office conversation with Captain America in his outfit is before the battle. I think I've got it down. I don't know why we need to see this out of order, but this is when they're having more conversation about the whole thing of, you know, they're basically just setting up this Force Works, I guess, for more 90s glory, which we can look forward to at some point on the Remzo and Jeffrey Do Force Works podcast. So stay tuned for that one. But yeah, conversation continues. The battle has ended elsewhere, and we're finding out too towards the end of this from Tony's people that there's been some ruckus at one of the facilities, because guess what? There's been about, well, let's see, there are some demonstrators who have been deployed called the Ecological Defense League. And what are they protesting? They are protesting a factory that is doing some work with gamma bombs.
ADL?
Yeah, it's the original ADL. The EDL, I guess, in this case. But yeah, almost the same thing there. We're not going to go any further on that one right now. But yeah, so you hear the word gamma. I think we can all guess who's going to show up next. So Tony goes to check out the protest, or Iron Man goes to check out the protest. He shows up, and he's actually there to stop the military from stopping the protest. He's like, hey, stop. He breaks their guns. He's like, don't fuck with these protesters. Like, I'm going to go take care of some shit in here. So Tony goes inside and gets a very special piece of armor, one that makes its debut here, because guess who's knocking at the door? It's the Hulk. And guess what Tony's got ready? It's the debut of the Hulkbuster armor. Remzo, what can you tell me about the Hulkbuster armor?
The Hulkbuster armor was designed to bust the Hulk.
Thank you very much. That is correct. So Tony had this hanging around for a rainy day. I guess it did kind of make sense that he would keep it at like the Gamma facility, because, you know, if you're going to have a conversation with the Hulk, good chance it's going to happen there. So continuing the trend, do they talk first? Nope. We just start. We get right now. And to be fair, Tony just gave a lecture about this to the New Warriors. What does he do? Does he go? And now maybe he's just had enough of this because he's seeing how this trend is going late last few days where people just show up and fight him. So maybe that's why he got on the Hulkbuster armor as a defensive measure. But still, I don't know, a little aggressive when you just gave a speech about maybe we should be talking these things out and not just jumping to the fisticuffs. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But Tony, once again, despite the armor, is the first one to get punched. And he just flies into the air and he realizes, shit, Pug has never been my favorite person. I don't have much patience with people who think with their fists. has been a trend throughout this, but this is beyond the pale, even for him. Why is he going after me like this? And basically, as we have in the other issues, we get a number of pages of fisticuffs between these two. A pretty standard fight going back and forth, back and forth. Eventually, after pretty much what is an issue-long battle here, juxtaposes between some stuff with Bethany and, you know, it's Stark's people and all this other stuff, internal Stark Enterprises politics that I'm sure we'll get back to if I decide to keep going with issue 306. I'm not sure I will. Maybe Jeffrey will tell me if I should keep going with this series or not. But Tony says, you know, I'm a reasonable man. We should be talking this stuff out. He says, why are we not talking about this when you could just, you know, you had to come in here with your fists, and Tony and the Hulk just goes, you know, we could just schedule like a logical time for dismantling this. We don't need to destroy it. And Hulk just goes, okay. And Tony's like, but no, you had to wait. What did you say? He goes, yeah, that sounds fine. That works. I didn't come here to start a war. You know, I came out to work out a reasonable solution to a mutual problem. Now, in fairness, after the number of days Tony has been through this bullshit with other people and combined with his history of the Hulk that he knew for most of his life, who is just a rampaging maniac, maybe you can kind of understand where he's coming from with all this. Because at this point, intelligent Hulk, Professor Hulk, as they say in MCU, is a pretty new concept where they merge the Hulk personalities. And Remso and I looked at that issue way early on when they merged the Savage Hulk, the Gray Hulk, and Bruce Banner into one new personality, basically like Smart Hulk. Smart Hulk is all pretty new to everybody here. So maybe, yeah, Tony just was so used to the old Hulk, along with, you know, having Venom rip off his life model decoy's head, having to fight Black Batman, all of the events of the last few days maybe just had him a little bit on edge. So I think you can understand. You can give him the benefit of the doubt here. But in the end of the day, they walk off once again as old buddies once they took even 1 second to talk things out. And that pretty much, I don't know if this ends the crash and burn storyline, but it does end the run that Jeffrey put us on here. So I don't know. I don't want to spoil things, but do you want to give us a clue of where this goes, Jeffrey? How long does this sort of Tony dealing with the corporate chicanery go on for?
It wraps up in the next issue. Yeah, I thought that the storyline ended with issue 305, but it actually ends with issue 306.
Oh, was I supposed to go further? Shoot.
Oh, no.
You can fill up the ending for
that. Yeah, I'd said, you know, issue 305. Yeah, you know, it's a bunch of commie gobbledygook, you know, about, you know, ethical capitalism and so on and so forth.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, commie talk.
Yeah. I mean, basically, like, the highlight of the issue is like a splash page that is a speech. It's just a speech he gives to people.
Sounds like Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, let me just read you the first couple lines of it.
You're rolling my eyes. Sounds good.
Yeah, the last decade of the 20th century is the watershed of the most crucial and momentous period in human history. As a species, we have never before possessed the means to seize our own destiny so completely. In a span of time short enough to qualify as an historical eye blink, we will have the power to manipulate. So yeah, it goes on for that for two pages. And yeah, so
two
yeah.
Pages.
Two pages, damn. Yeah.
Oh, you think God. Someone was trying to make a statement with that?
Yeah.
Dude, Len Kaminsky is trying to be Christopher Nolan. He's trying to be Alan Moore with two page speeches. He's shooting for the stars with this run, you know?
Yeah.
Give him points for effort.
So yeah, and then it ends with him like I said, like his little cliffside house had been like torn up and a few issues earlier. And so he like goes and he demolishes it, starts rebuilding it. So, you know, because it's the start of a new day for Tony Stark. But yeah. And then I didn't read anything past that, but I mean, I had a subscription to this when I was a kid. So like, after this, like he like winds up getting, like
it was in your pull list, or did you have a mail?
No, like actually mailed to my house. Yeah, but yeah. So like after this, it gets very very 90s and very big dumb 90s stuff. Like he gets like his body hijacked again, and like he gets his mind trapped on the internet while an AI takes over his body, and like immediately gets totally wasted. Because the AI isn't used to like human feelings, and so the first thing that was earlier,
AI experiences what it's like to be a drunk and can't handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that storyline where being a drunk is this becomes a superpower.
Yeah, but yeah, so you know,
All right. Well, very good. I think that being said, it's time to wrap up and grade this puppy. Jeffrey, I think we'll let you get in on the grades too. But first, we're going to go. Why don't we go to Remzo first on this? We got the same artist, same writer, so we can give a full scale scoring here.
This is good. I'm somebody who personally, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, my second book was written in a nonlinear style. So it's not against nonlinear storytelling. I just don't think this was necessary. It distracts from
especially
everything.
Especially the three layers. Like, you're going to interpose a future and past conversation with, I could see just the conversation with Tony intersplicing that with the battle, also unnecessary, but then to add another conversation from the future and mix them all.
I would have taken out Hulk. I would have taken out Captain America. I probably would have kept the New Warriors and done more with Venom to make this maybe a two issue arc. I'm going to give the story a 3 out of 5. It was entertaining enough, but it's those components where it's like they want to do a lot and they want to make it a little bit more sophisticated than a typical comic book. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. I think maybe I should give it like a 2.5, but I did enjoy it. So I'm going to give it that full 3 out of 5. The artwork I think is good too. I don't like the renderings of a lot of the characters. It's not necessarily that I don't like the artwork. It's just that I think that the characters have been drawn better, and I could see other artists at this time coming in and doing it. Like, whoever was doing West Coast Avengers at the time could have very easily done this. Or maybe Mark Bagley. I'm surprised it's never been given an Iron Man.
Why would Mark Bagley lower himself to this?
I think he could have done this. He did a good Venom, though. Did a really good Venom, Maximum Carnage. I'm going to give the artwork. I'm going to give the artwork a 3 out of 5. I'm going to give this a total 6 out of 10.
6 out of 10. All right. I wouldn't call it quite Sunday read at that level. That's more like a Wednesday homesick read. Maybe something like
that.
All right. Well, let's see. Storyline writing. Is this good? You could argue it's good. Is it great? No, you can't make that argument. Despite the fact that it was just the trope of every superhero battle starting with fisticuffs, and I did like that it was addressed, like Tony addressed it, and then it became sort of an integral part of the last battle where you really like Tony is more the one being the hothead, and Hulk was the one that was actually just trying to show up and have a conversation, but Tony didn't even follow his own advice from the previous issue. So I do kind of like that sort of running storyline of playing off the trope. That's the only reason I'm going to give the writing a 3 over 2.5, too, because I did kind of enjoy some aspects of it a little more than average. So, you know, it's not great, but I'm going to give it a 3 for the writing. And then for the art, I called it average art earlier. I'm going to call it average art now. An average of a 5 is 2.5. I'm giving the art a 2.5. That gives me a 5.5 for this one, which actually feels a little low because I didn't really hate this. So should I go higher? No, I'm going to stick to my scores. I think they're fair. This is not anything great, but I enjoyed it for reasons that aren't necessarily due to the quality. So I'm going to give it a 5.5. I'm going to stick with my score. Jeffrey, would you care to chime in?
Sure. Art. Yeah, I agree. 2.5. It's perfectly average 90s art. You know, not really more to say about that. And the writing, I, of course, have a weakness for big, dumb 90s stuff. So I'm going to give it a 3.5. Because, you know, it's entertaining. You know, it makes me smile.
Sometimes that's all you can ask for. So from Jeffrey, we get a 6 out of 10 for an official SPC store. This is getting an 11.5.
Just because of my slight grumpiness on it. But I kind of enjoyed it too.
Even if you had gone up, it still would have been like, what is Sunday read? 14?
You know what the thing is? I find with stuff like this too, I don't enjoy reading it as much as I do talking about it. So sometimes because we're making jokes and we're laughing about it or what have you, my score kind of goes up because I'm having fun talking about it. But I don't know if that should let my score go up because we're laughing at things that aren't, we're not laughing at it because it's such high quality necessarily. We're laughing at things that are kind of cheesy or silly. So, but you know, if without the podcast, I sometimes put to put that filter on, like without talking about it on the podcast, if I just read this and was not going to make jokes about it later and like have fun with you guys talking about it, would I give it even a lower score? I don't know. But it's a philosophical question to think about.
The question of our time. Yeah. And I mean, what is a Sunday read? It's a 14 out of 20.
Pretty, yeah, 12 to 14. Or did we decide on like 14? Yeah, like a 7-ish is about a Sunday read level. Yeah, it's like a 14 out of 20.
But I definitely got to say, like, I do not, and it's just Iron Man in general. These are my last thoughts. I did not like Iron Man growing up because it was a little bit between he's either too perfect in the Howard Hughes era or he's just mean and grumpy and post-alcoholism Tony Stark. This is an era of Iron Man where he tries to be a lot of things. And I think they want to set him up as like one of the senior, you know, Marvel Trinity heroes during this time. It never sat well with people. And I mean, in this situation where it's like nobody really respects him, it's like the new guard, new warriors, you know, that new era of heroes, they don't really respect him. The old guard, they don't really respect him. I mean, it comes to a thing where I feel like Iron Man has good stories and there have been cool Iron Man moments. But Iron Man, to me, in this period, was always a B-lister. And that's just one of those things that I think is crazy, because now if you say that to people, they would just completely disagree. And I'm not just saying that because of the Robert Downey Jr. effect. Warren Ellis did a fantastic job bringing him into the 21st century. Matt Fraction does not get enough credit for creating probably one of the best reinterpretations of Iron Man when he took over Invincible Iron Man issue one in 2008 onward.
All right, Renzo, so, you got to put me on this Fraction run, because I've never read Fraction run, and I do generally like Matt Fraction's work.
We got to do Seven Deadly Sins.
Cue me up an episode.
Yeah, we'll do Seven Deadly Sins. That's probably one of the best.
All right, Ellis basically turned Iron Man from a guy with armor into actually a superhero, because he actually has powers now, whereas the armor is like part of him, which I think really just ups his sort of badass level.
Even more than that, he makes Tony Stark matter. And that's where it's like, you know, that's, you see them in phases. It's like Howard Hughes, angry 90s, and then Robert Downey Jr.
Hashtag Stark Lives Matter. So thank you guys so much. Thank you, Jeffrey, for your continued support as always, and for coming on and joining us for this one. Of course, if you want to be like Jeffrey, I don't know if you can ever be quite like Jeffrey, but you can do your darnest. You can try your best. But heading over to patreon.com/secondprintpod. We have all sorts of pledge levels, whether it's just $5 a month gets you access to all of our exclusive audio, gets you in the Facebook group, the Fan Zone, early releases of all these episodes, sometimes live editions of this stuff, above and beyond all sorts of different levels, including the Journey into Mystery calls we have every month, the Epic Crossover level where you get hardcover sent to you, handpicked by Mark and Remzo, by me and Remzo. I'm speaking third person here. And of course, you can be at the producer level as well. What about the Kirby Club? I had a momentary lapse of memory there. You can join the Kirby Club like Jeffrey has and produce an episode of this show. So many options. patreon.com/secondprintpod. Let's speak clearly. Remzo, take us out.
Remember, there's one thing you can do. It's short, it's sweet. Whisper it to your lover, say it to your kids, name your dog. It's read comics and change the world. Good night, America.
Adios.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health, or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.